irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me today is special co-host Dr. Matt Polacek. Dr. Polacek is a nationally recognized expert spokesman on mental health and substance use disorder issues. He utilizes his experience and expertise to lead the Betty Ford Center's outpatient services as its director. Matt received his Master of Arts degree in Counseling Psychology and a Doctor of Psychology degree from Wright Institute, as well as an undergraduate degree from the University of Arizona. If you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. So, Matt, before we bring in our guest, please bring us up to date as to what you're doing for the Hazleton Betty Ford Centers.
Well, thanks, Alan. Things are going great over at our outpatient center in West L.A., and I wanted to let everyone know that this Thursday we have our Women's Symposium at UCLA. As everyone knows, addiction is an equal opportunity disease, but it really affects women differently than men, and especially regards with co-occurring mental health conditions. And recognizing these differences can be really critical in helping women find the most effective diagnosis, care, and recovery support. So those that are interested in attending the event, like I said, it's at UCLA at 251 Charles E. Young Drive. It's a all-day event. It's from 8 to 3:45. You get 5 CE units. It's about $165. It includes lunch and three books of our presenters. I'm going to be presenting along with Jesse Close, who's Glenn Close's sister, our own Dr. Prescott, and three other incredible presenters. For information about the event, go to www.hazeltonbettyford.org. You can always call me at my number, 310-307-7055. And when you go to the website, click right on events, and it'll take you right to the symposium. I'm also really excited to have here in session with us a licensed marriage family therapist and a good friend of mine, Joelle Jacobson. Welcome, Joelle.
Thank you for having me.
I am, as Dr. Polacek mentioned, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist for the past 15 years, and I specialize in adolescents, young adults, and families, along with being a addiction placement specialist. I was also a school counselor, and I have a private practice in Brentwood. I work for Hazleton Betty Ford, trying to help one family at a time.
Well, that's great. Now, it's interesting, in regards to our subject today, you know, obviously any form of mental health or whatever is a very, very difficult thing for any of us to go through. But next to losing someone you love, divorce has to be one of the most traumatic of life's experiences. And at the same time, it's the path out of a bad marriage and ideally for all parties to a happier and more fulfilling life. So with us to talk about this subject is the author of his new book, Divorce Demystified, Everything You Need to Know Before You File for Divorce.
Practicing in Michigan for more than 40 years, our guest has been published frequently on many divorce topics. A contributor and blogger for the Huffington Post divorce section, Henry Gornbein also produces regular podcasts for DivorceSourceRadio.com.
In addition, he has hosted and produced his own It's a Philo award-winning TV show, Practical Law, with more than 700 programs that he's aired to date.
Most recently, Henry's been a featured speaker about the impact of social media on divorce, along with issues including wiretapping, computer hacking, phone tapping, spy cams, and other issues that can arise during divorce and have criminal law violation implications.
Yeah, and also being an investigator, I'm very interested to hear some of his input in regards to those areas. So, Henry, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to sharing some of my thoughts and beliefs with you in the coming minutes as we do the show.
You know, in doing some research, I had learned something interesting, that January actually was the busiest month for divorce filings. What's that about?
It's about the fact that the holidays are usually a lull in the family law area, and people often will, what they will do is they'll go through the holidays, and often people have unrealistic expectations. You have the Currier and Ives Christmas ideal, the holidays, everything's perfect, but everything is not perfect. And you have the situation where many people will go to a Christmas party. Maybe they'll say the wrong thing. Maybe they'll have one drink too many. Maybe something will be inappropriate. And so these are things that happen over the holidays. And also many people will make it a New Year's resolution to say, I'm not going to go through another year again. And after the holidays, I'm going to file. And I have a lot of people who will come to me in November and December saying, I've had it. I'm going through another holiday season. But come the new year, one of my resolutions is to get rid of my spouse. So these are some of the factors. And also, people often have unrealistic expectations as to what to expect during the holidays. So this all leads to the fact that January is one of the busiest divorce months of the year.
Now, Henry, would there also be part of the reasoning for that in regards to the children, that based on the fact that many families that do have children, they're looking at the holidays saying, we really don't want to ruin the holidays for them, so they're going to wait till January?
Absolutely. That's a major factor. And a lot of people, and you have people, you know, often coming in now from all parts of the country to share, whether it's Christmas or other holiday occasions, and they're together. And so you don't want to ruin things for the children. So the people suffer through it. And then come the new year, things often change.
All right. Well, I noticed that in your book, one of the things that you talk about is the team approach in regards to preparing for divorce. So, again, as a licensed investigator, I'm certainly aware of some of those things. But in regards to your situation, who is generally on the team?
Well, as a licensed investigator, I often use licensed investigators because if someone believes there's an affair or there may be issues involving drugs, so these are things that part of the team is often a licensed investigator, but the key people, from my perspective, is a therapist. And I work with therapists and believe in using therapists for three reasons. First reason, of course, is to see if you can salvage the marriage. Second reason is, as you're going through divorce, it's important to have a good support system, and a therapist is clearly part of the support system. And as you mentioned earlier, divorce is one of the most traumatic things that can happen in a lifetime, with the most traumatic thing being the death of a child. Second is the death of a spouse in an intact marriage, and right behind is the divorce. It's right up there. And the third reason for having a therapist as part of your team is the fact that people tend to repeat their mistakes. And unless you have help, people who are married into abusive relationships or married into a relationship or another marriage where there's issues involving alcohol or drugs, they're going to keep repeating the pattern. And in my practice, I've represented two women who were each 36 years of age, and I handle each one's sixth divorce. Other parts of the team, we often work with forensic accountants when you're looking at business evaluations and practices. Again, you can sometimes use a private investigator if you're trying to track down missing assets or the fact that in so many cases we have what is called an underground economy where people have two sets of books, especially in businesses such as restaurants, party stores, liquor stores. There are so many examples. We could go on and on. Here in Michigan, where I practice more and more, we use mediators to help people resolve things. In some cases, there will be psychologists to do testing and psychological evaluations in highly contested custody cases. There may be the use of appraisers. We appraise real estate. Sometimes we're appraising art and antiques and collectibles. There may be realtors because you may be buying or selling property. So again, you're working with many, many people, and I often look at the attorney as a quarterback, trying to coordinate these people to really assist the client to do what's best on a case-by-case basis. So that's what I mean by a team approach to divorce.
Henry, that was a really beautiful response, especially your understanding of the need for the extra psychological support. So what would you say about choosing the right divorce attorney? What is your criteria for our listeners?
Well, it's like anything else. You've got to ask questions. In my book, I give examples of questions to ask an attorney. I give examples of what to expect from an attorney. There's an old saying, sometimes, you know, how do you find an attorney? Word of mouth. Referrals are a good way to find attorneys. The Internet is becoming an increasingly important vehicle for finding an attorneys. There are now rating services. You've got Super Lawyers. You've got Avvo. You've got Lawyers.com. So there are many, many ways to locate attorneys. But again, it's important to meet an attorney, to have a face-to-face meeting, consultation. It's like, often, what is your gut reaction? You can talk to, there are a lot of good attorneys out there, and, you know, there may be, in any case, there are going to be several who can do a very good job for you, but you want someone you're comfortable with. You want someone who you can communicate with. You want someone who's going to answer your questions. You want someone who makes you feel that your case, your needs are important. But on the other hand, you don't want someone who's going to be patronizing you. You don't want an attorney who's going to put their arms around you and say, especially to a woman, don't worry, dear, I'm going to take care of you. The reality is, in some cases, it's important to worry. And I believe that knowledge is power. I believe an attorney should be communicating, should be copying clients in on every aspect of the case so that what you're doing, you're working with a client. You go on to your next case, but your client has a result that can impact upon many, many years of his or her life with regard to economic results, with regard to child rearing and custodial results. So it's important that the client understands, and it's important the client is working as part of a team with you so that, you know, there's an old saying that knowledge is power, and this is very, very important in selecting an attorney. I also believe that sometimes you select an attorney and it's not the right fit. And there's nothing wrong with changing an attorney. It's like I have people who come to me for second opinions, and if they have an attorney who's doing a good job, I send them back. But sometimes it's just a matter of a psychological fit that's not meshing. And it's like everyone's entitled to two, sometimes three attorneys. But once you get beyond number three, there's something wrong with the client. Just like for a therapist or doctor, when you keep changing therapists, once you get beyond two or three, then there's usually something wrong with the client. So, and I have a case that's one of the worst cases ever where I was attorney number one, and the woman is now on her 16th attorney.
Ooh.
So.
You mentioned knowledge is power. And, you know, I have a lot of patients coming in, and I'm trying to keep up with the modern technology and how it's used. And, you know, as far as the legalities, and what do people need to know about, like the legalities with spy cams and computer hacking and phone taps? I've heard arguments like the car is in my name, too, so I want to put a tracker on it and other stuff. How does the legal realm come into this?
Okay, let me give you some examples. Let's start with phones. States differ. And, for example, in Michigan, the law is that if I'm on the phone and I'm taping your conversation and you don't know about, that's legal. That's called a one-party state. In many states, we have what are called two-party states, and that is if both parties are on the phone, they both have to know about it. And in some situations, it can be, I think it's just one or two-party states. I mean, I can't record a conversation and not be part of the conversation, but the other side does not have to know about it in Michigan. Let's go to spy cams, nanny cams. The law is, and this is pretty general, you can have a spy cam in a living room, in a dining room, in a kitchen, in a place where, you know, privacy is not expected. Bedroom, bathroom, you have a right to privacy, illegal. interesting situation. You've all heard of Elmore Leonard, the famous author. He lives in Birmingham, Michigan. He passed away, and a former client of mine bought his home. Redid it, refurbished it, remarries a woman. He's not home one weekend. The woman's there. At 1 a.m. on a Saturday night last summer, she walks out of the home, forgetting that there are surveillance cameras all around the home, walks two blocks down in a negligee to her first divorce attorney's house. Needless to say, that was a very short-term second marriage.
Wow.
So you got to be careful what you're doing. Let's get to cars. The law, again, it differs from state to state. In Michigan, a licensed private investigator can put a LoJack, you know, a locating device on a car. A police officer can, but an individual cannot. And this, again, you check with the laws of your state. But what's also interesting now, phones are beautiful locating devices. I have an iPhone, and if you have an iPhone, if you have a family plan, guess what? Everything's out there. You can see your spouse's text, your spouse's email. It's all on iCloud. We now have Find My Phone. Well, guess what? Find My Phone can be used to find my wife or find my husband. So it's like nothing's safe. If you're going to have, you know, if you're going to have an affair, if you're going to do something that could get you in trouble or ruin your marriage, be careful, because with modern technology, it's very easy to track someone. Let's go to computers. The law basically is, think of email as snail mail. Once it's opened, it's fair game. You can't open someone's letter. You can't open someone's email. On the other hand, now we have cases where you're involved with tracking devices, with keystroke devices, with Waze, and these are illegal. The problem you have is our law enforcement is so busy in other areas, unless it's really notorious, they're not going to do anything. And I have had cases where the other side has been getting every keystroke, everything, so knowing what's going on. So you got to be very, very careful. And if you suspect something, number one, bring in a forensic expert to wipe your computer. Bring in a forensic expert to look through your house to make sure that there aren't any phone taps or that there aren't any hidden cameras. So these are things to be very, very careful about. And if you're worried, stop emailing, change an email account, and that's when it's important to start having face-to-face meetings with your attorney so that, you know, the pleadings, the privileged communication isn't out there. So these are all things to deal with.
Wow, well, that's great information. You know, about the children, children are really the biggest victims when their parents are separating. How do you protect the children?
You know, there's a program that started in Michigan that's now, I don't know if it's nationwide, but it's widely used. It's called SMILE. SMILE is Start Making It Livable for Everyone. And this is a concept that started in the county where I practice. And what it is in every divorce with children, the adult parents are required to go to what is called a SMILE session. And in the SMILE session, there will be a judge, a family law attorney, a therapist, and a SMILE video. And it's all about the fact that your children, as you stated, are the innocent victims of your divorce. Keep them out of the divorce. Don't show them pleadings. Don't show them what's going on. Try and be civil to your spouse. There are so many issues where children are put in the middle. They're given too much information. I have cases where children are given copies of documents and told, see what your dad is doing, see what your mom is doing. And the ideal of SMILE, the ideal of keeping your children out of it, is once the divorce is over, hopefully people will heal. They'll move on. And what you want to be able to do is share significant events so that whether it's a high school graduation, whether it's a soccer event, whether it's a my granddaughter plays hockey. She also plays cello. These are things that parents should be able to, if they can't sit together, at least they can sit near each other and be able to say, we're proud of our children, we're proud of our grandchildren, and we're going to be in the same room. similarly, if there are special significant events, whether it's a religious, it could be a christening, it could be a baptism, it could be a bar bat mitzvah, it can be a wedding, you want to be able to share these events. You want to be able to, the key is that your children should be free to love each of you. And too many times parents forget this. The laws in most states regarding custody are based upon the best interests of the children. But people forget about this and want to put their own selfish interests first. And, you know, that gets me into another area, and that is I see a lot of cases, and I don't care what you label it, parental alienation or someone trying to gaslight or brainwash the children against the other parent, but it happens too frequently. And what you're doing, you're creating a situation where you're really, you're hurting, yeah, you're trying to get back at the other spouse, but you're really destroying your children. And I can't emphasize too strongly that the children are the innocent victims, and keep them out of your messes. And that's another reason why in my book I tell people, especially with custody cases, you don't want to go to trial. Because once you go to trial, you're airing your dirty linen, you're saying things that you cannot take back, and you're making it clear in public, on the record, you're saying that mom or dad is a horrible person. And then the divorce is over. In most cases, there's going to be some type of shared custodial arrangement, especially here in Michigan, which is becoming more and more the norm rather than the exception. And how do you co-parent? How do you move forward when you've been saying all these horrible things? So the best way is to try and dial it down, look for ways to work together, and remember that this is your children's lives, and you want to do what's best for them. So these are key issues from my perspective.
That's great feedback. You know, what parents, I think, don't realize is that when they're putting down the other parent to their child, 50% of their child is that parent. So they're essentially putting down their child. So what would you say to people who are trying to stay together for the children, yet they're modeling an unhealthy relationship?
You know, well, first of all, if you're trying to stay together, get some counseling to see if you can turn an unhealthy relationship into one that's healthy. But if it's impossible, you know, it's the old saying, you're waiting until the children grow up, you're waiting until the dog dies, there's always an excuse. And a psychologist told me a number of years ago that in deciding to divorce, you got to make a decision once and for all. It's not like, for years we had a standard poodle. And with a dog, certain breeds, they crop their ears, they crop their tail. Well, you don't keep snipping until you get to the right place. It's done in one fell swoop. And if you're going to do it, you've got to do it. And if it's a horribly toxic marriage, then staying together for the children, if they're in a horrible environment, you're not helping the children. If anything, you're showing them a lot of bad behavior, and you're going to make it more and more dysfunctional for them, so they won't be able to have healthy or good marriages as they become adults. So, again, this is where a therapist's role can be so, so important, as to counseling, bringing the children in and working together. But in many instances, it's better to divorce, especially if it's that toxic. The other thing is that children, no matter how toxic, from what I've learned over the years, they still want their parents together. They still hope that their children, even after a divorce, will get back together. So, you know, it's often a catch-22, and that's what's sad.
All right, we're going to take a break. Henry, I just got to tell you, it is so refreshing to hear an attorney that is out there talking about people trying to stay together, trying to take care of the kids. Unfortunately, I know you know that there are attorneys out there that are a little more interested in fueling the flames. So this is just such great information for everybody. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back. Now, if anybody wants to follow along, if you want to open up another window, you can go to Henry's site. It is divorcedemystifiedbook.com. So again, divorcedemystifiedbook.com. You can open up another window. Again, if you're driving, don't try this, but stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We'll be right back. Founded over 25 years ago,
to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And again, we are talking about one of the most traumatic life experiences that any of us can go through, which is divorce. But the beauty of it is that we're speaking with an attorney that is able to tell us a lot about the ways in which you do it so it's not as traumatic. So, Henry, thank you so much for being with us.
So I appreciate the chance to kind of share my views. I've been doing this for many, many years, and I've seen some of the worst cases ever, and, you know, the more I see, the more I feel that if there's some way to keep people out of court, to look for ways to turn what could be a disaster into something less, then it's for everyone's best interest. And I mean, a lot of attorneys will push cases to generate larger and larger fees. I've had situations where attorneys will say, you know, when I'm ready, I'll settle a case, which means when the fees have been built up to a significant amount. And this serves no one. It's like, I would rather, in a case that merits it, get people through the system as fast as possible if they're ready, and move on. On the other hand, one of my chapters deals with what I call the four aspects of divorce, and I think that's important. Because most people, most attorneys, most judges, most others have never analyzed that there are different portions of a divorce. And let me tell you what I mean. The first aspect is a legal divorce. This is where a judge says, you're divorced. Simple. The marriage is legally ended. Second aspect, there's a psychological component. And we talked a lot about this and the need for therapy. But there's also the fact that if two parties are on the same page and are both saying, we've given it our best, we're ready to move on, let's get a divorce. You've got a very simple divorce with little or no problems and few fireworks. But if one spouse is not on the same page, is not ready to move on, then you're going to start having fireworks. And sometimes that'll be because perhaps there's an issue over drug abuse, there can be physical abuse, there can be other substance abuse, there can be an affair, there can be control or even some severe emotional problems. And then the worst case is what I call the never-ending divorce. This is where one spouse or the other cannot let go, often because of some severe emotional or psychological problems. And he or she wants to keep punishing the other spouse. And these are the cases where you have court appearances long after the divorce is final, where people are fighting over the children, putting them in the middle and literally destroying them. You have issues involving parental alienation. You have issues involving allegations of abuse. And these are the worst cases. So that's the psychological aspect. Third, there's an economic component. And every divorce, you're dividing property, you're dividing debts. In many cases with children, you're setting child support. And in many cases, there may be alimony or spousal support. So there's an economic component that's part of the divorce. Finally, in three major religions, there's a religious aspect to divorce. In Judaism, there's a get, which is a religious divorce, and is controlled by the male. And the female cannot remarry within the Jewish faith, the Orthodox or conservative branches of Judaism, without a get or Jewish divorce. Similarly, in Islam, there's a similar proceeding that's a religious divorce that's granted by the sheikh locally, and again, it's controlled by the male. And if it's not granted, the female cannot remarry in the Islamic faith, and, you know, there's a huge stigma if this is not given. So those are issues to deal with. Third, in Catholicism, while there's no divorce, there's an annulment that's granted through the archdiocese, and if someone wants to remarry within the Catholic Church or have the sanctity of the Church, they must have the annulment. No other religion touches on divorce.
You had mentioned substance abuse, and, you know, in California we've got these legalization of marijuana, and I'm curious as to if a parent does use medical marijuana, does that something that could come into a court case as far as, you know, custody and whatnot?
You know, I've dealt with this issue both in articles and on my cable television show, and I do a lot of work where I interview judges or talk to judges and get their take on things. And here in Michigan, medical marijuana is legal locally, but it's still not legal federally. So you're kind of in the crosshairs. But a lot of judges treat it just like alcohol. And they're saying if someone has a medical marijuana license, okay, but don't do it in front of the children. Or don't, you know, if you're high and caught driving or something like that, you're in trouble. Or if you're, you know, doing it in front of the children, that could be an issue. So again, I think a lot of judges are looking at it as another substance, but again, you've got to be careful because while it may be legal medically, it's still not legal per se. So there's a lot of movement in this area, and more I see the trend will be to legalize it, but then it'll be treated like any other substance where you've got to be careful not to abuse it.
Well, so that also leads me to my next question in regard to substance use. When parents are using prescription medication, that they obviously shouldn't be driving their children to school on, yet they're very low functioning, maybe sleeping all day. There could be a lot of neglect involved because of the pain medication use. So how does that come into play?
Again, it's the same thing. It's like there are so many situations where if someone, you know, if you're using it responsibly, it's okay. But I see a lot of cases where someone's addicted. It can be to alcohol. It can be to prescription medication. It can be to marijuana. It can be to drugs. It can be to, you know, cocaine, to heroin, Vicodin. There are all these issues. And again, judges are going to look at these and say, if you're addicted, if you're abusing them, then guess what? You may not be able to see your children. And I had a case where I was representing a woman who had a substance abuse problem. Well, it's one thing if you're doing it where the children aren't around, but what she did, she was driving, she stopped for drinking while driving while she had the children with her. And she lost custody and was put under very careful supervision and monitoring. So you have these issues that can be very, very tricky. And when you're dealing with alcohol or drugs or other substance issues, these can be critical. And these can make or break a custody case.
Yeah, you know, on your blog that I read on the Huffington Post, you were discussing cheating in a marriage and implying that addiction is really a form of cheating. You specifically brought up spending time and money online with credit cards. So does this also apply to drugs and alcohol?
It can. I mean, again, it's harder because especially, you know, our society looks upon alcohol. It's like maybe a drug of choice. It can be very, very dangerous. It can be very, very things, but it's so accepted. And it's like there's an old saying, a good attorney knows the law, a great attorney knows the judge. And sometimes we're dealing with judges who have human frailties, just like anyone else. I remember years ago, there was a judge who was part of the divorce court, and in the morning he was fine. After lunch he was a different person because he was an alcoholic. So you have these issues you have to deal with, and you have to know. That's why it's so important to get the facts, and when you're dealing with any case, to know as much as possible. And I will often ask my clients, you know, we'll discuss these things. Is there an issue over alcohol? Is there an issue over drugs? Are there any other substance abuse issues? What's the worst thing that you think your spouse would say about you? I mean, it's like if clients lie to me, okay, and they do. But if you lie in court, even over a little thing, then your credibility is shot. And from then on, you're going to have serious problems. So I'm hoping that when I ask these questions of clients or prospective clients, that they tell the truth, that they're going to, so that, again, if you know someone has a problem or an issue, you can deal with it better, and that can be part of your strategy as you move forward with a case. Because what you're trying to do is you're trying to help a client through a very troublesome, rough time in his or her life, but you're also dealing with what I call many, many moving parts. And these include, custodial child-related issues. They include economic issues. They include whether or not you're dealing with substance abuse or physical or psychological abuse. So there are many, many issues that you have to look at. And when I'm analyzing a case or working through the process with the client, these are all part of the interplay with the legal system, and it's important to know as much as possible on all these issues.
I think while we're talking about this area of drug use, we have a listener question that is coming in, and again, I want to take the time to thank the listeners that send in these questions. Some send them in ahead of time because they can't listen live, or some will go ahead and send them in right now. We will do everything we can to get your questions asked, and if we can't get to them, we will still get them answered, but we will put them on our site, and you can go to Answers for the Family, and we will still have the answers there. This one comes from someone who says, 3 years ago, my dear friends split up. Their daughter, who is 15 years old and very dear to me, is now having problems in school and was just caught using drugs. Her father is so angry about the breakup, he is still not speaking to his ex-wife except to degrade her and blame her for the situation. Their daughter has learned that she can manipulate them and runs between the two parents, creating havoc at each point. I am at a loss as to what to tell my friend to do about this. She is the kindest person I know, and my heart breaks that she feels so helpless in this situation.
You know, this is sad and tragic. I mean, my quick answer would be get that child into therapy as soon as possible. And if the former husband won't agree, then file a motion to the court saying that the daughter is having a lot of problems, there's so much bitterness, and a good therapist is needed. It's like, this is what's sad, and this is where, through anger or bitterness, this former husband is trying to destroy and get back at his former wife, but what he's doing is destroying his daughter, and that's the tragedy.
You know, there's difficult dads, and Alan and I were working on a case in Whittier a few years back where Westshield came to transport this child, and we had read the report, and he was supposedly extremely violent and dangerous, and the father was really never around. So Alan's team goes in, and they're always really calm and really zen-like and create this great space, and they got to this teen to our facility, and the young man seemed really, really connected to the Westshield agent. So I'm talking to the agent, and I said, you know, I'm so surprised that he connected so well to you. And what he said to me was interesting. He said that when working with kids with difficult dads, it's rarely an issue with the father being aggressive, tough, or punitive. Those fathers I can deal with. But the difficult cases are like this one when the fathers aren't really involved. Do you see one parent's absence in divorces being one of the biggest issues affecting the children?
You know, I've seen everything, and it's like if someone's not involved, that's an issue. And that's why, again, the trend here in Michigan, and I'm sure it's true in California, is more and more they have shared custodial arrangements. If you and I were doing this show 20 years ago, typically a traditional parenting time or custodial arrangement was custody with one parent, usually mom, and dad seeing maybe alternate weekends or alternate holidays, maybe dinner once a week or something like that, and that was it. Now with both parents working more and more, and with the fact that especially where I practice, most of the judges in the family courts are women, it's a different ball game. And for example, typically we do what is called a 225, which means you want to involve everyone as much as possible. And 225 is an equal custodial arrangement with mom, for example, having Mondays and Tuesdays, dad having Wednesdays and Thursdays overnight, and alternate weekends. so the children will never go more than 5 days without seeing the other parent. And so these are things that you work on. These are things, and, you know, more and more, and part of the programs like SMILE that I mentioned earlier are to involve both parents. But if you have one parent who's dropping out, and, you know, what can I say? You're going to have bigger and bigger issues. And like the question that came in about the father who's bitter and keeps attacking his ex-wife, well, all he's doing, as I said earlier, is hurting the child. And that's why we have therapists here on the show. It's so important to get that child into therapy, really. Because all they're going to do is make sure that this child can never have a good relationship. And, you know, she's already acting out with drugs, and soon little problems become big problems. And there's an old saying, little children, little problems, big children, big problems. And, you know, one thing, it's like with teenagers. I kiddingly say to clients, it's reverse custody. You take them. No, you take them, because teenagers, even under the best of circumstances, can be difficult. And also the other reality, if you're dealing with 14, 15, 16-year-olds, they don't want to spend time with either parent. They want to be with their friends. They want to be in their social activities, their extracurricular activities, their sporting events. So these are some of the realities. But still, it's so important, and that's why I'm going to advocate again and again, this father should be in therapy. And if he refuses, the mother should get that child into therapy at least to try and be there for her, to try and counteract all the venom that's coming from her former husband. But often there are no easy or good answers, and that's the sad reality.
You know, as a dad, do you feel, and we kind of hear, and I don't know whether it's wives' tales or truth, that the courts definitely favor the mom and always seem to, you know, to look after the mom in when, you know, proceedings and decisions. Do you feel that's pretty accurate and true in your experiences?
No, it's changing. And that's what I'm saying. More and more, at least in Michigan, the courts are gender neutral, and more dads are getting equal custody when they want it. It's a question, if you want it, you're going to get it. What's interesting, I tried a case last year where it was a very high-conflict divorce. I represented the father, and one of the children was a daughter who was still being breastfed by the mother, and the other child was about 3 years of age. So you have a little boy who's three and a daughter who's about, at the time of the trial, was about 16 months of age. And the court ruled a phase-in, and at age two, it was to be 50, not 50-50. My client was very upset because instead of getting 7 out of 14 overnights, he got 6 out of 14 overnights. But again, the trend is, if it's not 50-50, it's going to be close to it, unless there's a good reason not to, where I practice law.
You know, you had mentioned earlier that the trend is now going to the 225 custody as far as the children seeing each parent during the week and on the weekends. I'm wondering, do you feel that's disruptive at all for school-aged children to be 2 days with mom and then going 2 days with dad and homework and there's after-school activities and then the every other weekend has always, you know, been.
I think it can be hard on them, and you know there can be other things. Like I've done things where you have 1 week on, 1 week off, but maybe on the off week you break it up with a Wednesday overnight. So there are a lot of ways to do it on a 50-50 basis, or perhaps with older children, it could be every other week or every 2 weeks there, and maybe have some dinners in between. You know, there's so many ways to do it. Or if you have situations where one parent works long hours but still wants a lot of time, perhaps during the school year, more time will be spent with the other parent, and during holidays and summers, the parent gets more time. So there are ways to work it out. And again, this is where it's so important to communicate, to try and look at what is in the best interest of the children and what makes sense. There's no one-size-fits-all. What's also interesting, in Michigan, where I practice, there's legislation now proposed to say that there should be a statutory presumption that moms and dads will have equal custody unless there's a good reason to the contrary. I don't believe with that. In that, I don't agree with that. And the reason I don't believe that one size fits all, and we have in Michigan, as we do in most states, including California, some semblance of what is in the best interest of the children. And I think people forget, it's not what's best for mom, it's not what's best for dad, it's what's in the best interest of those children. And now, where we have same-sex marriages and same-sex divorces, again, it should still be what is in the best interest of the children.
So would you say that a 50% custody agreement could be that the children are with the other parent, they switch off weekends, but that they live at one home the majority of the time and the other parent will come over for a Wednesday night dinner or practice Thursday nights?
I mean, these are all possibilities, and it really depends on how well they communicate.
Right. Therein lies the issue.
Right. What I've learned over the years, the worse the communication, the higher conflict, the more you have to spell out every detail. So if you have a high conflict divorce, you've got to spell out pickup times to the minutes, drop off times to the minutes. You've got to spell out where they're going to meet. In the worst case, I have people picking up and dropping off at police stations. In other situations, we have where people are to communicate certain times by phone or by Skype or by something called our Family Wizard, which is a way that you can keep track of emails and texts. So, again, the worse the case, the more you have to monitor, the more you have to control things.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have another listener question coming in. Question coming in, and it really touches on that area of you know, dealing with, you know, who you communicate with. And this one says, I'm a 20-year-old and learned that my mom has been cheating on my dad for years. Although she has admitted it to me, she continues to lie about it to others while filing for divorce and trying to get custody of my younger brother and sister. I hate what she is doing to my father, and I hate being in this position. What can I do without losing my relationship with one or the other?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, I would really say that he should stay out of it, kind of. It's like this is an issue that the parents should deal with. And, you know, people cheat a lot. And, you know, again, when I'm representing this person who's cheating, the argument is which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did someone cheat because the marriage was bad and stray, or is it someone who's just going to be cheating? And, you know, there aren't good answers other than the fact that I think even a 20-year-old should really stay out of the fray and let the parents sort things out for themselves, especially where anything he says to mom or dad is probably going to make things that much harder for him with regard to relationships. Another thing I want to interpose here is the fact that the internet and social media has had a huge impact on divorce. And when I wrote the book and first started writing it, 20% of all marriages were being impacted and broken up by social media. Now it's up to a third. And it's because it's like, you know, you're talking about the affair. People would meet over a coffee clutch or around a water cooler at the office and things would happen. People would meet in restaurants or bars. You know, there are ways. Now you press a button and you can meet anyone. You can have any vice in the world at your fingertips. Pornography is huge on the internet. If we were talking 20 years ago and someone wanted to have access to pornography, they'd walk into a movie theater or an adult bookstore, and it wasn't as easy. Alcohol, drugs, you can get them. There was a site called the Silk Road where the illegal drugs were being sold all over the internet. The head of that site is now in jail. You have now, we have all these things of social media with regard to people who will videotape their intimate moments, and it can get out there. There's so much, you know, you have the trial that just ended with regard to the newscaster, Erin Andrews, and the fact that she was publicly humiliated, and the hotel chain was, and the stalker were hit with a $55 million verdict. You have Hulk Hogan, where this website was hit with, I think, a $115 million verdict this past week. Mm-hmm. So it's out there. It's like nothing's safe. I deal a lot in the book and in my practice with social media, and I tell people, don't post. Stay off of social media. Be careful what you say. I mean, nothing is sacred. We have Ashley Madison, you know, their motto is life is short, have an affair. I've had clients who were busted because of that when everything leaked and when Ashley Madison got hacked. So, you know, there are so many things. There are revenge porn sites where people would post pictures of a former lover or spouse, and the heads of these sites, in California it's illegal and people are going to jail for running these sites. So there's so much going on. I've had people who have been caught in these scams called phishing, P-H-I-S-I-N-G, where there are alleged paramours. There's a Norwegian scam where I had a woman who ran off to England to meet another man, and she was scammed out of thousands and thousands of dollars. You have people who day trade on the Internet. You have people who are addicted to shopping. I've had cases where teenagers became addicted to games on the Internet and had to drop out of school and go into intensive in-house therapy. We now have gambling online, which is huge. I mean, even the fantasy football is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's all online. So, well, it's like,
Henry, you're absolutely right. And I mean, there is so much going on in regards to the Internet. And again, it is something. There's great tools. People can go on. They can find people that can help them. But at the same time, like you're saying, they can also find trouble. And it sounds like we could do a whole nother show just on that subject alone. But again, at this point, we're out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it very much. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to pick up the book, it is divorcedemystifiedbook.com. If you're driving, you can't write that down, go to our website, answersforthefamily.com. All the information will be there. Thank you so much, Henry, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I would love to do another show with you. There's so much we can talk about, and I really appreciate being able to share this with you. Thank you.
All right, and for everybody else out there, tune in next week when our guest, Richard Leader, will join us to discuss his book, his workshops, and his movement that all go by the same name, The Power of Purpose, Find Meaning, Live Longer, and Better. For everybody out there, be good humans, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.